today and what drives me. So for many decades now, I've been paying it forward, working to give back by feeding more than 2 million people a year through my Anthony Robbins Foundation. And for the last few years, my wife and I have personally matched all those contributions. So today, I'm proud to say that a kid who started with no food himself personally helps 4 million people a year to feel cared for and fed. In fact, in total, over the last 37 and a half years, almost 38 years now, I've had the honor to feed 42 million people. So I had a goal. I want to use this book as a vehicle to help you develop enough wealth, both physical and emotional and financial wealth, so that you can be a force for good through your own economic contributions as well. I know it might take time, but I will tell you this. If you won't give a dime out of a dollar, you're not going to give a million out of 10 million, much less 100 million out of a billion. The time to give is now. When I have nothing is when I began this process. And the reward when you give, even at times when you think you have very little, is you teach your brain that there's more than enough. You can leave scarcity behind and move towards a world of abundance if you can give even a little bit when you think you can't. So I'd like to get you started on the path. And as you listen to this, I want you to know you're not only helping yourself create a financial future, but you're going to help those 17 million American children who face hunger every night. How? I made a decision to do more in 1 year than I've done in my entire lifetime of feeding people. So in the name of my readers and my listeners, at the time of this publication, I'm donating 50 million meals for men, women, and children who suffer in this country from homelessness or just from hunger. And you'd be surprised who those people are. Yes, some of them are scarred by memories of serving in war, and some are mentally or physically challenged. But millions are people just like you and me who had a normal life, and then the loss of a job or a health problem or a family loss pushed them over the edge to where they couldn't meet their financial obligations. And listen, most Americans are only a few lost paychecks away from insolvency. So I decided to do this. And by the way, I'm not doing this as a book promotion. This book is going out. I'm not waiting to see how many books are sold. I'm writing the check up front because I'm committed and because I want to inspire others to do what they can as well. So together, let's both you and I reach out and help. In fact, as I was writing this book, Congress slashed $8.7 billion from what used to be the food stamp budget. To give you perspective, that means every family that they've served in the past now needs to go without a meal 1 week out of the month for 12 months. This is insane. I've witnessed firsthand the impact this has had on volunteers and nonprofit organizations that are always already working to fight against hunger. And that's why I put up 50 million meals. But I'm using my influence to get people to pay attention. And I'm using it to get matching funds so that hopefully we can feed 100 million people. You're welcome to join in and help. But know this, because you bought this book, because you're listening to it, you're personally feeding 50 million people. My hope is by the end of the book, you'll be inspired to make some small direct donation on your own as well. I have information in the last chapter on how you can use your spare change, literally, to help change the world. And there are so many simple and enjoyable ways in which you can give and create a legacy that you can be proud of and that your family can enjoy being a part of as well. Well, that's quite a full chapter, isn't it? I know it's a lot, but hopefully it didn't feel too long. Do I have you hooked on what's really possible for your life right now? Can you imagine what it would feel like to take yourself from where you are today to where you really want to be? What would it be like to have your experience of money no longer be a source of stress, but rather a feeling of excitement or even pride? I want to make you a promise. I promise you, the feelings you'll have after you conquer this area of your life will create a momentum like very few things else in your life. Because when financial success is turned around, you'll start to think about and focus on the things that are even more important. Are you ready? And one final note. If you listen this far, I want to compliment you because, unfortunately, you're in the top 10% of people that buy a nonfiction book. That's right. Statistics show that fewer than 10% of the people who buy a book that is a nonfiction book ever get past the first chapter. How insane is that? Now, I wrote this book to be simple, but also I wanted to give you the opportunity to go deep, to master this game, to arm you with the skills that would allow you to master your financial world once and for all, today and for years and decades to come. It's not meant to be a, quote, little red book of investing. So I want to invite you right now. I want to challenge you. I know there's so much in your life that can distract you. Commit yourself right now to take the full journey with me. I promise you, if you do, the rewards you'll reap will last for decades to come. But first, Let me give you a quick overview on what it'll take to have an income for the rest of your life. A paycheck that gives you the life you have today or a lifestyle that's even better than today without ever having to work another day of your life. Because once you achieve that, you'll only work because you want to. Let's grab an outline for the road ahead. Let's discover the 7 simple steps to financial freedom. Turn the page and let's rock.
Chapter 1.2. The 7 Simple Steps to Financial Freedom. Create an Income for Life. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Lao Tzu. Tell me something. Have you ever had that experience, you know, the completely humiliating experience of playing a video game against a child? Who always wins? The child, of course. But how does she do it? Is she smarter, quicker, stronger? Here's how it works. You're visiting your niece or nephew, and she or he will say, "Come play it with me, Uncle Tony." You immediately protest, "No, no, I don't know this game. You go ahead and play." And they say, "Come on, it's easy. Just let me show you." Then they shoot a few bad guys when they pop up on the screen. You still resist, so they start pleading. "Come on, come on, please, please, please." You love this kid, so you give in. Then she says the simple words that tell you you're being set up. You go first. So you decide you're going to make it happen. You're going to show this kid a thing or two. And then what? Bam, bam, bam. And 3.4 seconds, you're dead. Shot in the side of the head. Smoked. Then the kid takes the gun and suddenly it's bam, 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 bam. The bad guys are dropping from the sky and whizzing around every corner in hyperspeed. The kid is anticipating every move and picking them off. And about 45 minutes later, you get your second turn. Now you're ticked off and even more committed. This time you last a full 5 seconds, and she goes another 45 minutes. You know the drill. So why do these kids always win? Is it because they have better reflexes? Is it because they're faster? No. It's because they've played the game before. They already have one of the greatest secrets to wealth and success in life. They can anticipate the road ahead. Remember this. Anticipation is the ultimate power. Losers react, leaders anticipate. And you'll learn to anticipate from the best of the best, the Ray Dalios and the Paul Tudor Joneses and the army of 50 other extraordinary financial leaders who know the road ahead. They're here to help you anticipate the problems and challenges on the path to financial freedom so you don't get hurt along the way. Like Ray Dalio says, it's a jungle out there, full of things that can kill you financially, and you need trusted guides to help you get through it. With their help, we're going to lay out a plan that will help you anticipate the challenges, avoid unnecessary stress, and arrive at your ideal financial destination. I want to give you a quick overview of where we're going and how this book is set up, so you can make the best use of it. But before we do that, let's be clear about our true purpose. This book is committed to one primary outcome. To set you up so you have an income for life without ever having to work again. Real financial freedom. And the good news is, it can be achieved by anyone. Even if you're starting out in debt, deep in the hole, no exaggeration, with a little bit of time, consistent focus, and the right strategies applied, you can get to financial security or even independence in a few years. Before we walk through the steps, let's first take a look at why being financially secure used to seem so simple. What's changed? And what do we need to do? Let's start with a little history lesson. You can be young without money, but you can't be old without it. Tennessee Williams. Everything about your financial life seems so much harder these days, doesn't it? I'm sure you've wondered, why is it so difficult to save money and retire comfortably? We've come to treat retirement as a given in our society, a sacrosanct stage of life. But let's not forget that retirement is a relatively new concept. The idea has really only served a generation or two, for most of us, our parents and grandparents. Before their time, folks generally worked until they couldn't. Until they died. Do you remember your history? When was Social Security invented? It was created under Franklin Delano Roosevelt during the Great Depression, when there was no social safety net for old and sick people. And old was a different concept back then. The average life expectancy in the United States was 62 years. That's all. And Social Security retirement benefits were supposed to kick in at age 65, so not everybody was expected to collect, or at least not for very long. In fact, Roosevelt himself didn't live long enough to cash in on his benefits, not that he would have needed them. He died at the age of 63. The Social Security Act eased the suffering of millions of Americans during a time of crisis, but it was never intended to become a replacement for retirement savings, just a supplement to cover the most basic needs. And the system wasn't designed for the world we live in today. Here's the new reality. There's a 50% chance that among married couples, at least one spouse will live to the age of 92, and a 25% chance that one will live to 97. Wow. We are closing in on a life expectancy of age 100 pretty damn quick. And with longer lives, we expect longer, much longer years for our retirement. 50 years ago, the average retirement was 12 years. Someone retiring today at age 65 is expected to live to 85 or longer. That's 20-plus years of retirement, and that's the average. Many will live longer and have 30 years of retirement. It is not realistic to finance a 30-year retirement with 30 years of work. You can't expect to put 10% of your income aside and then finance a retirement that's just as long. John Chauvin, Stanford University Professor of Economics. How long do you expect to live? All the breakthroughs we're seeing in medical technology might add years to your life, decades even. From stem cell technology to 3D printing of organs to cellular regeneration, technologies are exploding onto the scene. You'll hear about them in Chapter 7.1, The Future is Brighter Than You Think. It's a blessing, but are you ready? Many of us are not. A recent survey conducted by MassMutual asked baby boomers to name their number one fear. What do you think it was? Death? Terrorism? Pestilence? No. The number one fear of baby boomers was outliving their savings. Death, by the way, checked in a distant second. The baby boomers have a right to be scared, and so do millennials. According to an Ernst & Young study, 75% of Americans can expect to see their assets disappear before they die, and the Social Security safety net, if it survives into the next generation, won't provide a reasonable standard of living on its own. The current average benefit is $1,294 per month. How far do you think that will stretch if you live in New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, or Miami? Or how long will the equivalent system work in your country if you live in London, Sydney, Rome, Tokyo, Hong Kong, or New Delhi? No matter where you live, if you don't have another source of income, you could end up the best-dressed greeter at Walmart. It's obvious that we'll need to stretch our retirement income longer than ever before, smack in the middle of a flat economy at a time when many are struggling to recover lost ground. How have we responded to this growing emergency? A lot of us find the problem so painful and overwhelming that we just block it out and hope it goes away. According to EBRI, the Employment Benefit Research Institute, 48% of all working Americans haven't even calculated how much money they'll need to retire. Yep, 48%. That's an astounding number. Almost half of us have yet to take one of the first steps toward planning for our financial futures, and our time of reckoning is coming. So what's the solution? It starts with taking step one. Make the most important financial decision of your life. By the time you finish this book, you'll not only have an automated plan for saving and investing, you'll also know how to create income without having to work. Wait a second. That's too good to be true, you're thinking. And anything that sounds too good to be true probably is, right? Yet, I'm sure you know there are some exceptions to the rule. What if I told you that today there are financial instruments that will let you make money when the markets go up and not lose a penny when they go down? 20 years ago, it would have been impossible for ordinary investors to imagine such a thing, but investors using these tools in 2008 didn't lose a dime or even a night's sleep. I have this kind of security and freedom for my family. It's an amazing feeling to know you'll never run out of income. And I want to make sure you have it for yourself and your family as well. In this book, I will show you how to create a guaranteed lifetime income stream, a paycheck for life without ever having to work again. Wouldn't it be great to open up your mail at the end of the month and instead of finding a statement with an account balance you're hoping hasn't gone down, you find a check in its place? Imagine this happening every month. That's income for life, and there's a way to get it. In Section 2, we'll show you how to build your investments into a sizable nest egg, what I call a critical mass, that will enable you to make money, even while you sleep. With a few simple strategies, you'll be able to create a guaranteed income stream allowing you to build, manage, and enjoy your own personal pension on your own terms. It's probably hard for you to imagine that there's a structure available today that can deliver for you these things. 1. 100% principal protection, meaning that you can't lose your investment. 2. The returns in your account are directly linked to the upside of the stock market, for example, the S&P 500. So if the stock market goes up, you get to participate in the gains. But if the market goes down, you don't lose. And 3. You also have the ability to convert your account balance to a guaranteed income that you'll never outlive. You can stop imagining. It's here. It's one of the opportunities that's now available for investors like you, and you will find out about it in Chapter 5.3. To be clear, I'm not suggesting here that even with income for life, you'll want to stop working when you reach the traditional retirement age. Chances are you won't. Studies show that the more money you earn, the more likely you are to keep working. It used to be that the goal was to get rich and retire by the age of 40. Now the goal is to get rich and work until you're 90. Nearly half of all individuals who earn $750,000 per year or more say they will never retire, or if they do, the earliest they would consider it is age 70. How about the Rolling Stones and Mick Jagger at age 71 still rocking the world? Or think of business moguls like Steve Wynn at 72, Warren Buffett at 84, Rupert Murdoch at 83, Sumner Redstone at 91. At those ages, they were all still running their businesses and crushing it. Probably still are. Maybe you will be too. But what happens if we can't work or don't want to work anymore? Social Security alone is not going to be much of a cushion for our retirement. With 10,000 baby boomers turning 65 every day and the ratio of old to young getting more and more lopsided, it may not even be around, at least as we know it. In 1950, there were 16.5 workers paying into the Social Security system to support one person getting benefits. Now, it's 2.9 workers per recipient. Does this ratio sound sustainable to you? In an article titled, "It's a 401k World," Thomas Friedman, the New York Times columnist and best-selling author, wrote, "If you are self-motivated, wow, this world is tailored for you. The boundaries are all gone. But if you're not self-motivated, this world would be a challenge because the walls, ceilings, and floors that protected people are also disappearing. There will be fewer limits, but also fewer guarantees. Your specific contribution will define your specific benefits much more. Just showing up will not cut it." As for those sweet employee pensions our parents and grandparents counted on in retirement, they too are going the way of blacksmiths and telephone operators. Only about half of America's private sector workforce is covered by any kind of retirement plan at all, and most of those are now do-it-yourself, take-all-the-risk models. If you're a municipal, state, or federal employee, you might still enjoy a government-backed pension, but with every passing day, there are more folks like those from Detroit to San Bernardino wondering if that money will be there when it's their time to collect. So what's your retirement plan? Do you have a pension? A 401k, an IRA? Today, about 60 million Americans participate in 401k plans, totaling over $3.5 trillion. But they can be a bad, even disastrous deal for you if you're in one of the high-fee plans that dominate the market. That's why if you're in a 401k plan, you've got to listen to Chapter 2.5. Myth 5, your retirement is just a 401k away. What you'll learn and the simple changes you can make could transform your life, giving you peace of mind and the certainty you need today, and mean the difference between retiring early and not being able to retire at all. Death and taxes, the only constants. not to be outdone by volatile markets moving faster than the speed of light, literally, exorbitant and hidden fees, and an outdated pension system, let's not forget about our good old friend the taxman. Oh, the taxman. He'll take up to 50% or more, thank you very much, on everything you earn. If you thought hidden fees were the only drag on accumulating wealth, you've missed the biggest culprit of all. We all know the drag of taxes to some degree, but few realize just how big a bite taxes take from our ability to achieve financial freedom. Sophisticated investors have always known this. It's not what you earn, it's what you keep that matters. The greatest investors in the world understand the importance of tax efficiency. Just how destructive can taxes be when compounded over time? Let's try a metaphor. Say you've got $1 and somehow you're able to double it every year for 20 years. We all know this game. It's called compounding, right? After year one, you've doubled your dollar to $2. Year two, $4. Year three, $8. Year four, $16. Year five, $32. If you had to guess, what do you think your dollar has grown to by year 20? Through the magic of compounding, in just two decades, your dollar turns into, drumroll please, $1,048,576. That's the incredible power of compounding. As investors, we want to tap into this power. But of course, the game is not that simple. In the real world, Caesar wants to be paid first. The taxman is looking for his piece. So what's the impact of taxes on the same scenario? Once again, take a guess. If you're fortunate enough to pay only 33% in taxes per year, what do you think your dollar has now grown to after taxes in 20 years? Again, take a moment and really guess. Well, if the tax-free number was $1,048,576, with 33% tax, would that be about $750,000 or even $500,000? Think again, Kemosabe. Now, let's look at the next column and see the incredible dollar-draining power when we take out money for our taxes each year before compounding, doubling our account. Assuming an annual tax rate of 33% at the end of those same 20 years, the actual net amount you'll end up with is just over $28,000. That's right, $28,000, a difference of over $1 million, and that doesn't even account for state taxes. In some states, such as California, New York, and New Jersey, you can expect the total to be significantly smaller still. Sure, this dollar-doubling, dollar-draining scenario is based on returns you'll never see in the real world, but it illustrates what can happen when we neglect to consider the impact of taxes in our financial planning. Given the way things are going in Washington, do you think taxes are going to be higher or lower in the coming years? You don't even have to answer that one. In Section 5, I'm going to give you the in that until now was only available to sophisticated investors or ultra-high net worth individuals. I'm going to show you what the smartest investors already do, how to take taxes out of the equation using what the New York Times calls the insider's secret for the affluent. It's an IRS-approved method to grow your money tax-free, and you don't have to be rich or famous to take advantage of it. It could literally help you achieve your financial independence 25% to 50% faster, depending upon your tax bracket. No person is free who is not master of himself. Epictetus. But plan or no plan, the future is coming on fast. According to the Center for Retirement Research, 53% of American households are at risk for not having enough money in retirement to maintain their living standards. That's more than half. And remember, more than a third of workers have less than $1,000 saved up for retirement, not including pensions and the price of their home, while 60% have less than $25,000. How can this be? We can't blame it all on the economy. The savings crisis started long before the recent crash. In 2005, the personal savings rate was 1.5% in the United States. In 2013, it was 2.2% after topping 5.5% at the height of the meltdown. What's wrong with this picture? We don't live in isolation. We know we need to save more and invest. So why don't we do it? What's holding us back? Let's start by admitting that human beings don't always act rationally. Some of us spend money on lottery tickets even if we know the odds of winning the Powerball jackpot are 1 in 175 million, and that we are 251 times more likely to be hit by lightning. In fact, here's a statistic that will blow your mind. The average American household spends $1,000 a year on lotteries. Now, my first reaction when I heard this from my friend Shlomo Benarzi, a celebrated professor of behavioral finance at UCLA, was, "That's not possible." In fact, I was recently at a seminar and asked the audience how many had bought a lottery ticket. In a room of 5,000 people, fewer than 50 raised their hands. If only 50 out of 5,000 are doing it and the average is $1,000, then there are plenty of people buying way more. By the way, the record is held by Singapore, where the average household spends $4,000 a year. Do you have any idea what $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 set aside and compounded over time could be worth to you? In the next chapter, you're going to discover how little money it takes to have a $500,000 to $1 million or more in retirement that requires almost no time to manage. So let's turn to behavioral economics and see if we can't find some little tricks that could make the difference between poverty and wealth. Behavioral economists try to figure out why we make the financial mistakes we do and how to correct them without even our conscious awareness. Pretty cool, huh? Dan Ariely, renowned professor of behavioral economics at Duke University, studies how our brains fool us regularly. Human beings evolved to depend on our sight, and a huge part of our brain is dedicated to vision. But how often do our eyes deceive us? In a simple visual illusion exercise, Ariely shows a drawing of a narrow table on the left and a fat table on the right, and asks people to choose which one is longer. Most people pick the narrow table on the left because it appears to be longer. But they are wrong. The lengths of both tables are exactly the same. If you do an internet search for Ariely table illusion, you can do this exercise yourself. Even after proving the tables are the same size by using a red line to reveal the lengths of each, once the red line is removed, the left narrow table still appears to be longer. We know the answer, and yet our brains continue to deceive us. The one on the left still looks longer. Your eyes haven't caught up with your brain. Our intuition is fooling us in a repeatable, predictable, consistent way, Ariely said at a memorable TED talk, and there is almost nothing we can do about it. So if we make these mistakes with vision, which in theory we're decent at, what's the chance that we don't make even more mistakes in areas we're not as good at? Financial decision-making, for example. Whether or not we think we make good financial decisions or poor ones, we assume we're in control of the decisions we do make. Science would suggest we're not. Just like the visual illusions we're susceptible to, Ariely later told me in an interview that he chalks up many of our decision-making mistakes to cognitive illusions. A case in point. If you were to walk into your local Department of Motor Vehicles tomorrow and be asked the question, "Do you want to donate your organs?" what do you think you would say? Some of us would immediately say yes and think ourselves selfless and noble. Others might pause or balk or be turned off by the gruesomeness of the question and decline. Or maybe you'd punt and say you need time to think about it. Regardless, you'd assume that your decision is based on free will. You are a competent and capable adult qualified to determine whether or not to donate your organs to save a life. But here's the thing. A lot of it depends on where you live. If you are in Germany, there's about a 1 in 8 chance you'll donate your organs. About 12% of the population does. Whereas in Austria, Germany's next-door neighbor, 99% of people donate their organs. In Sweden, 89% donate, but in Denmark, the rate is only 4%. What gives? Why such a disparity? Could it be about religion or a fear factor? Is it based on culture? It turns out the answer is none of the above. The huge disparity in donor rates has absolutely nothing to do with you personally or your cultural heritage. It has everything to do with the wording on the form at the DMV. In countries with the lowest donor rates, like Denmark, there is a small box that says, Check here if you want to participate in the organ donor program. In countries with the highest rates, like Sweden, the form says, check here if you don't want to participate in the organ donor program. That's the secret. Nobody likes to check boxes. It's not that we don't want to donate our organs. That little bit of inertia makes all the difference in the world. If a problem is too overwhelming, we tend to just freeze and do nothing. Or we do what's been decided for us. It's not our fault. It's the way we're wired. The problem with organ donation is not that people don't care. It's that they care so much. The decision is difficult and complicated, and many of us don't know what to do. And because we have no idea what to do, we just stick with whatever is chosen for us, says Ariely. This same sense of inertia, or picking what has been chosen for us, helps explain why only a third of American workers ever take advantage of available retirement plans. It explains why so few of us have made a financial plan for our futures. It seems complicated. We're not sure what to do, so we punt, or we do nothing at all. Ariely told me that when it comes to the physical world, we understand our limitations and build around them. We use steps, ramps, and elevators. But for some reason, when we design things like healthcare and retirement and stock markets, we somehow forget the idea that we are limited, he said. I think that if we understood our cognitive limitations in the same way that we understand our physical limitations, even though they don't stare us in the face in the same way, we could design a better world. Remember what Ray Dalio said about going into the jungle, that the first thing he asked himself was, "What don't I know?" If you know your limitations, you can adapt and succeed. If you don't know them, you're going to get hurt. My goal in this book is to wake people up and give them the knowledge and the tools to take immediate control of their financial lives. So I've created a plan that won't trip you up because it's too complex or too hard or time intensive. Why? Because as we've seen from those DMV forms, complexity is the enemy of execution. That's why I've divided this plan into 7 simple steps and created a powerful new smartphone app, completely free, to guide you through them. You can download it right now by going to tonyrobbins.com/masterthegame. You can check off your progress as you go and celebrate your victories along the way. The app will support you, answer your questions, and even give you a nudge when you need it. Because you're going to get excited, have the best intentions, and then a few distractions or an attack of inertia can knock you off target. This automated system is designed to prevent that. And guess what? Once you're done, you're done. After your plan is in place, you'll only have to spend an hour or so once or twice a year to make sure you're on course. So there's no excuse not to stay on the path to a lifetime of financial security, independence, and freedom, and have plenty of time to enjoy the things that really matter to you. Hopefully by now, your mind is churning. I know I've given you a lot to think about so far, but I'm committed to creating lasting breakthroughs in your financial life, and I want you to get a clear picture of the road ahead. So let's take a quick walk through the 7 simple steps to financial freedom. If you belong to a generation raised on blogs and tweets, my guess is that you're saying, why don't you just put these 7 steps, and for that matter, the whole book, in one paragraph for me, or even an infographic? I could do that, but knowing information is not the same as owning it and following through. Information without execution is poverty. Remember, we're drowning in information, but we're starving for wisdom. So I want to prepare your mind for each of the steps that are coming. And this way, you'll be ready to take the necessary actions that will guarantee that your path to financial freedom is realized. This book is designed to give you mastery over a subject that torments most people because they've never taken the time to master the fundamentals that would set them free. And mastery means going deep. Anyone can listen to something, remember it, and feel like they've learned something. But true mastery requires 3 levels. The first is cognitive understanding. It's your ability to understand a concept. Any of us can get it, and many of us already have a cognitive understanding of personal finance and investing. But that and $3 will almost buy you a cup of coffee at Starbucks. What I mean is that information by itself is not valuable. It's only the first step. You start getting real value when you reach the second step, emotional mastery. That's where you have heard something with enough repetition and it stimulated enough feelings inside you, desires, hungers, fears, concerns, that now you become conscious and capable of consistently using what you've learned. But the ultimate mastery is physical mastery. That means you don't have to think about what you do. Your actions are second nature. And the only way to get it is through consistent repetition. My great teacher, Jim Rohn, taught me that repetition is the mother of skill. I'll give you a perfect example of where I fell short in this area. In my early 20s, I decided I wanted to get a black belt in martial arts, and I had the privilege of meeting and becoming dear friends with the Grandmaster, Jun Ri. He's the man who brought Taekwondo to this country and who trained both Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali in the art. I told him I wanted to gain my black belt in the shortest time in history, and I was willing to do whatever it took in terms of practice, commitment, and discipline to break the record. He agreed to travel on the road with me to complete my training, and it was brutal. I'd often finish a seminar and arrive at 1 o'clock in the morning for my training, and then work with the master for another 3 or 4 hours. I would have to get by on 4 hours of sleep at most. One night, after a particularly long period of practicing the same exact move at least 300 times, I finally turned to my teacher and asked, "Master, when can we go on to the next move?" He looked at me sternly and said, "Oh, Grasshopper, this is the next move. The fact that you can't tell the difference between the move you made this time and the one you did before shows you are still a dabbler. Those fine distinctions are the difference between a master and an amateur, and mastery requires this level of repetition. With each repetition, you must learn more," he said with a smile. Do you see my point? This audiobook was not designed for you to breeze through in an afternoon. As you listen, you'll notice that this book is unlike anything you've encountered before because it reflects my unique style of teaching. You'll be asked a lot of questions, and you'll sometimes hear facts and phrases that you've heard before. There will be a lot of points emphasized. It's a technique designed to mark out key ideas and to build knowledge in your mind, body, and spirit so that action becomes automatic. That's when you'll start seeing results and reaping the rewards that you desire and deserve. Are you up for the challenge? And remember, this is not just a book, it's a blueprint. Each section is designed to help you understand exactly where you are in financial terms and help you close the gap between where you are now and where you truly want to be. This work is designed to arm you, not just for today, but for the rest of your life. I know you'll come back at different stages to take things to the next level. Section 1. Welcome to the jungle. The journey begins with this first step. Like all great adventures, we'll start by getting oriented for the trip. In Chapter 1.4, you'll learn more about the psychology of wealth, what holds us back, and some simple cures. You'll uncover what it is you're really investing for and unleash the power of the best financial breakthrough strategies. Then in the next chapter, we blast off. Here, you'll take the first of the 7 simple steps and make the most important financial decision of your life. This chapter is a must-listen. You'll learn how, with even the smallest amount of money combined with the miracle power of compounding, you can absolutely become financially independent in your life without ever having to make a fortune in annual income. You'll activate this system by deciding on a portion of your income to save and invest for compounded interest. You'll become not just a consumer in the economy, but also an owner, an investor with a stake in the future. You'll learn how to build your own automated money machine, a system that will generate income for you for a lifetime while you sleep. Section 2. Become the insider. Know the rules before you get in the game. Maybe you've heard that old expression, "When a man with money meets a man with experience, the man with the experience ends up with the money, and the man with the money ends up with the experience." Now that you've decided to become an investor, this section explains the critical rules of the game so that you don't fall prey to those players with all the experience. This roadmap shows the way through the investment jungle that Ray Dalio was talking about, with the worst danger zones marked with big red X's. These are the marketing myths. Some people call them investment lies. They are often designed to systematically separate you from your money. You'll learn why the returns the mutual funds advertise are not the returns that you actually receive. I know it sounds crazy, but the 1% fee that you think is the total cost you're paying is really only one of more than 10 potential fees, and that your average mutual fund might be eating up 60% of your potential returns over time. Remember, in this short section alone, you'll save between $250,000 and $450,000 minimum, back in your pocket without getting any better returns over your investment lifetime. And you'll see that this amount is all documented based on studies, not based on my opinion or funny math. We'll also discuss the deceptions that can be part of target date funds and no-load funds, and arm you with a real understanding of how to protect yourself from firms that often tailor these products and strategies for their maximum profit, not yours. By the end of this section, you'll have taken your second step, and even if you only have a small amount of money, you'll be investing it like an insider. Section 3. What's the price of your dreams? Make the game winnable. Together, we'll explore your financial dreams and set some realistic goals that will make the game truly winnable. Most people have no idea how much money they'll need to achieve financial security, independence, and freedom, or the giant numbers they have in their heads are so intimidating that they never even start a plan to get there. But in Chapter 3.1, you'll figure out what you really want, and it's going to be exciting, especially when you realize that your dreams may be closer than you think. You'll not only dream, but you'll turn those dreams into reality, a plan, in Chapter 3.2. It's going to be different for everyone, and we have the software to customize it for you. You can do it online or on your app, where you can keep it and change it as many times as you want until you find a realistic and achievable plan. And if you're not getting to your dreams fast enough, we're going to show you 5 ways to speed it up in Section 3. By the time you've taken Step 3, you'll not only know how to build wealth for your future retirement, but how to enjoy it along the way. Section 4. Make the most important investment decision of your life. Now that you're thinking like an insider, you know the rules of the game, and you've learned how to make the game winnable. It's time to make the most important investment decision of your life. Where do you put your money and in what proportions? Asset allocation is what every Nobel Prize winner, every hedge fund manager, every top institutional investor, bar none, told me was the key to successful investing. Yet virtually 99% of Americans know little or nothing about it. Why? Maybe it seems too complicated. But in Chapter 4.1, I'm going to make it simple and also show you where to go to have an expert assist you online. Proper asset allocation means dividing up what you're investing into buckets that are secure and give you peace of mind versus buckets that are riskier but may have greater potential for growth. It's the ultimate bucket list. And when you complete Step 4, you'll not only know how to become wealthy, but how to stay wealthy. Section 5. Upside without the downside. Create a lifetime income plan. What good is investing if you don't have any money to spend? Most people have been so conditioned to focus on putting more money in a 401k plan or building their retirement account, they forget they'll need to draw it down as income someday. And since account balances fluctuate, remember, they don't just go up. We must create and protect our income plan. Remember 2008? How do you protect yourself from the next crash? How do you set up a portfolio that avoids getting whipsawed? How do you know you won't end up outliving your money, which is so many people's number one fear? You may be blessed with a long life, but it may not feel like a blessing if you run out of money. In this section, we'll offer specific insights into one of the best-kept secrets in the financial community and help you develop a guaranteed lifetime income plan, a certain revenue stream that can form the foundation for true financial peace of mind. We'll explore creative ways you can stop or drastically limit losses and increase your gains, using the investment vehicles favored by banks, large corporations, and some of the world's wealthiest individuals. What do they know that you don't know? It's how to have the upside without the downside, and to make sure your gains aren't eaten away by taxes. Section 6. Invest like the 0.001%. The Billionaire's Playbook. We'll hear what's good and what's challenging about the state of the global economy, how we got here, and what may be coming next from some of the clearest and most influential thinkers in the financial world. Then you'll meet the masters of the game, 12 of the most colorful and brilliant minds in finance, and learn what has guided them through every economic condition. We'll ask Paul Tudor Jones how he made a 60% monthly return in 1987 by predicting the Black Monday crash when the market was burning down around him, and how 21 years later he was able to make nearly 30% when the market lost nearly 50% and the world seemed to be falling apart. Plus, we'll look at how he avoided losses and managed to have 28 straight profitable years in every conceivable market, never losing a dime. Some of the people you'll be meeting in our Billionaire's Playbook, such as Charles Schwab, Carl Icahn, T. Boone Pickens, Ray Dalio, and Jack Bogle, struggled when they were growing up. They weren't born with a silver spoon in their mouth. So how did they make it to the top? We'll ask what money means to them, and we'll peek into their actual portfolios. By the time you finish step six, you'll know how the 0.001% invests. Section 7. Just do it, enjoy it, and share it. Here we'll come up with an action plan to help you live a better, fuller, richer, more joyful life. And we'll talk about what to do to stay on target. I guarantee we'll blow your mind with some of the breathtaking new technologies that will make even the near future better than you think. This is the opposite of what most people believe. According to an NBC Wall Street Journal poll, 76% of Americans, an all-time record, think that their children's lives will be worse off than their own. But you're going to get an insider's look at what's coming from some of the most brilliant minds of our time. We'll hear from my friends Ray Kurzweil, the Edison of our age, and Peter Diamandis, creator of the XPRIZE, about new technologies coming online. 3D printers that will transform your personal computer into a manufacturing plant, self-driving cars, exoskeletons that enable paraplegics to walk, artificial limbs grown from single cells, innovations that will dramatically change our lives for the better in the very near future. I'm hoping this will inspire you and also show you that even if you somehow screw up and don't get your financial act together, you'll still have a better quality of life. And for those with the resources, you're looking at a future of limitless possibilities. We'll wrap up with the simple fact that the secret to living is giving. Sharing with others not only gives you a greater quality of life, but also brings you a greater experience of joy. And you'll learn about new technologies that make giving painless and fun. As you feed your mind and build your own wealth, my hope is that you'll do well enough to help others. And remember, you're my partner in giving now. And as you're listening, someone in need is being fed. I don't believe people are looking for the meaning of life as much as they are looking for the experience of being alive. Joseph Campbell. I've made these 7 simple steps to financial freedom as clear and simple as possible for you. Now it's up to you to take action and follow through each of the 7 steps one at a time to get the job done. What do you need to see it through? What works best for you? Let's create a simple plan together now. Some of you might sit down and listen to the whole book over a weekend, and if you do, then you're as crazy and obsessed as I am, a brother or sister on the path. If you don't have a weekend to spare, consider taking a chapter a day or a section a week. Immerse yourself a little bit at a time for a few weeks and you'll get it done, whatever it takes. This is a journey of a lifetime, a journey worth mastering. If you're with me, let the journey begin. Chapter 1.3. Tap the power. Make the most important financial decision of your life. My wealth has come from a combination of living in America, some lucky genes, and compound interest. Warren Buffett. Let's kick it into gear now. It's time to begin our journey by tapping the power that can create real wealth for anyone. It's not some get-rich-quick scheme, and it's not what most people think will make them financially free or wealthy. Most people are looking to make some big score, a financial windfall, and then they think they'll be set. But let's face it, we're not about to earn our way to wealth. That's a mistake millions of Americans make. We think that if we work harder, smarter, longer, we'll achieve our financial dreams, but our paycheck alone, no matter how big, isn't the answer. I was reminded of this fundamental truth on a recent visit with the noted economist Burton Malkiel, author of one of the classic books on finance, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. I went to see Malkiel in his office at Princeton University because I admired not just his track record, but his no-nonsense style. In his books and interviews, he comes across as a straight shooter, and the day I met him was no exception. I wanted to get his insights on some of the pitfalls facing people at all stages of their investment lives. After all, this was the guy who helped create and develop the concept of index funds, a way for the average investor to match or mimic the markets, a way that anyone, even with a small amount of money, can own a small piece of the entire stock market and have true portfolio diversity instead of being stuck with the ability to buy only a small number of shares of stock in one or two companies. Today, this category of investments accounts for over $7 trillion in assets. Of all the people I'd planned to interview for this book, he was one of the best qualified to help me cut through the clutter and doublespeak of Wall Street and assess our current investment landscape. What's the biggest misstep most of us make right from the start? Malkiel didn't even hesitate when I asked him. He said the majority of investors fail to take full advantage of the incredible power of compounding. The multiplying power of growth times growth. Compound interest is such a powerful tool that Albert Einstein once called it the most important invention in all of human history. But if it's so awesome, I wondered, why do so few of us take full advantage of it? To illustrate the exponential power of compounding, Malkiel shared with me the story of twin brothers, William and James, with investment strategies that couldn't have been more different. He gives this example in one of his books, so I was familiar with it, but to hear him tell it in person was an incredible experience. A little like hearing an 81-year-old Bruce Springsteen play an acoustic version of Born to Run in his living room. The story supposes that William and James have just turned 65, the traditional retirement age. William got a jump start on his brother opening a retirement account at the age of 20 and investing $4,000 annually for the next 20 years. At 40, he stopped funding the account, but left the money to grow in a tax-free environment at the rate of 10% each year. James didn't start saving for retirement until the ripe old age of 40, just as his twin brother William stopped making his own contributions. Like his brother, James invested $4,000 annually, also with a 10% return tax-free, but he kept at it until he was 65, 25 years in all. In sum, William, the early starter, invested a total of $80,000, $4,000 per year times 20 years at 10%, while James, the late bloomer, invested $100,000, $4,000 per year times 25 years at 10%. So which brother had more money in his account at the age of retirement? I knew where Malkiel was going with this, but he told the story with such joy and passion that it's like he was sharing it for the very first time. The answer, of course, was the brother who'd started sooner and invested the least money. How much more did he have in his account? Get this, 600% more. Now, step back for a moment and put these numbers in context. If you're a millennial, a Gen Xer, or even a baby boomer, pay close attention to this message. And know that this advice applies to you no matter where you are on your personal timeline. If you're 35 years old and you suddenly grasp the power of compounding, you'll wish you got started on it at 25. If you're 45, you'll wish you were 35. If you're in your 60s or 70s, you'll think back to the pile of money you could have built and saved if only you'd gotten started on all that building and saving when you were in your 50s and 60s. And on and on. In Malkiel's example, it was William, the brother who'd gotten the early start and stopped saving before his brother had even begun, who ended up with almost $2.5 million. And it was James, who'd saved all the way until the age of 65, who had less than $400,000. That's a gap of over $2 million, all because William was able to tap into the awesome power of compounding for an additional 20 years, giving him an insurmountable edge, and saddling him with the family dinner checks for the rest of his life. The man on top of the mountain didn't fall there. Vince Lombardi. Not convinced that compound interest over time, is the only sure way to grow your seed of money into the bumper crop of financial security you'll need to meet your future needs? Malkiel shared another favorite story to bring home his point, and this one's from our history books. When Benjamin Franklin died in 1790, he left about $1,000 each to the cities of Boston and Philadelphia. His bequests came with some strings attached. Specifically, the money was to be invested and could not be touched for 100 years. At that point, each city could withdraw up to $500,000 for designated public works projects. Any remaining money in the account could not be touched for another 100 years. Finally, 200 years after Franklin's death, a period of time that had seen stocks grow at an average compounded rate of 8%, each city would receive the balance, which in 1991 amounted to approximately $6.5 million. Imagine that $1,000 grows to $6.5 million, with no money added over all those years. How did it grow? Through the power of compounding. Yes, 200 years is a long, long time, but a 3,000% rate of return can be worth the wait. Malkiel's examples show us what we already know in our hearts to be true, that for most of us, our earned income will never bridge the gap between where we are and where we really want to be, because earned income can never compare to the power of compounding. Money is better than poverty, if only for financial reasons. Woody Allen. Still think you can earn your way to financial freedom? Let's take a quick look at how it's worked out for some of the highest paid people in the world. Legendary baseball pitcher Curt Schilling earned more than $100 million in an incredible career that included not one but two World Series championships for the Boston Red Sox. But then he poured his savings into a video game startup that went bankrupt and brought Schilling down with it. "I never believed that you could beat me," Schilling told ESPN. "I lost." Now he's $50 million in debt. Kim Basinger was one of the most sought-after actresses of her generation, torching the big screen with indelible roles in such films as 9½ Weeks, Batman, and L.A. Confidential, which earned her an Academy Award as Best Supporting Actress. At the height of her A-list popularity, she earned more than $10 million per picture, enough to spend $20 million to buy a whole town in Georgia. Basinger ended up bankrupt. Marvin Gaye, Willie Nelson, MC Hammer, Meatloaf, Billy Joel, they sold millions of albums and filled stadiums with adoring fans. Francis Ford Coppola, he packed theaters as the director of The Godfather, one of the greatest American films that, at least for a while, held the all-time box office record with gross ticket sales of $129 million. All had near brushes with bankruptcy, Coppola three times. Even Michael Jackson, the king of pop, who reportedly signed a recording contract worth almost $1 billion and sold more than 750 million records, was forced to the brink of bankruptcy in 2007 when he was unable to pay back a $25 million loan on his Neverland Ranch. Jackson spent money like he would never run out until he finally did. At his death 2 years later, he reportedly owed more than $300 million. Do you think any of these ultra-mega stars imagined a day when the money would stop flowing? Do you think they even considered preparing for such a day? Have you ever noticed that no matter how much you earn, you find a way to spend it? By these examples, it's clear to see that you and I are not alone. We all seem to have a way of living up to our means, and some of us, I'm afraid, find a way to live beyond our means. We see this most of all in the stars who take the biggest falls, like the rich beyond their dreams prize fighters who hit the canvas with a thud. Just look at the up and down and out career of former heavyweight champ Mike Tyson, who made more money in his time than any other boxer in history, nearly $500 million, bankrupt. But five-division world champion Floyd Money Mayweather Jr. is about to beat Iron Mike's earning record. Like Tyson, Mayweather fought his way up from hardscrabble beginnings. In September 2013, he scored a guaranteed purse of $41.5 million for his bout against Saul Canelo Alvarez, a record amount that grew to more than $80 million based on pay-per-view totals. And that was just for one fight. Before this giant payday, he'd already topped the Sports Illustrated Fortunate 50 list, ranking the richest athletes in the United States. "I love Mayweather personally. He's an extraordinarily gifted athlete with a work ethic like few alive. He's also incredibly generous with his friends. There is a lot to appreciate in this man. But Mayweather had fought his way to the top of this list before, only to lose his fortune to wild spending sprees and bad investments. He is